through the first 24 verses last week, so we're going to pick up and do 25 through 40 tonight. And if you've got your Bibles, I'm just going to read this through, and then we'll talk a little bit, just break it down verse by verse, but starting in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 25. "Now about virgins, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. Because of the present crisis, I think that it is good for you to remain as you are. Are you married? Do not seek a divorce. Are you unmarried? Do not look for a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. But those who marry will face many troubles in this life, and I want to spare you this. What I mean, brothers, is that the time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they had none. Those who mourn, as if they did not. Those who are happy, as if they were not. Those who buy something, as if it were not theirs to keep. Those who use the things of this world, as if not engrossed in them. For this world in its present form is passing away. I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife, and his interests are divided. An unmarried woman or virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. I am saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in undivided devotion to the Lord. If anyone thinks he is acting improperly toward the virgin he is engaged to, and if she is getting along in years and he feels he ought to marry, he should do as he wants. He is not sinning. They should get married. But the man who has settled the matter in his own mind, who is under no compulsion but has control over his own will, and who has made up his mind not to marry the virgin, this man also does the right thing. So then, he who marries the virgin does right, but he who does not marry her does even better. A woman is bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if her husband dies, she is free to marry anyone she wishes, but he must belong to the Lord. In my judgment, she is happier if she stays as she is, and I think I too have the Spirit of God." All right, we left off last week saying that this lesson we were going to talk about priorities. And Paul has a lot to say about priorities in this little section of Scripture. But you know, other outlets and other people have a lot to say about priorities too, in addition to the Bible. And I was thinking about our culture, and just think about kids nowadays who are going to school, and just what the educational system, without anything else, what the educational system, the message that our educational system sends to our kids nowadays. What is it? Well, you finish high school so that you can go to college. You go to college so that you can
get a degree.
Get a degree. You get that degree so that you can
get money. Go to grad school.
Go to grad school, continue the education, get more money, okay? You advance your education, or you go get this nice job so that you can
do what you want to do.
Have what you want to do, have what you want, okay? Get that financial security. You want to be financially secure so that you can
retire.
Take care of your family. Take care of your family. And that's really kind of ingrained in our kids. I mean, we live in this goal-oriented society that says you want this degree, you want this good job so that you can have this money, so that you can have the financial security to get this spouse, so that you can have these kids, so that you can raise these kids and find fulfillment in your family, so that you can eventually retire, so that you can have enough money to retire and not, you know, live off Social Security that may not be around when I'm your age. That's the message that's ingrained in our kids from the get-go, right? What about, okay, that's the educational system. What about the media? I mean, we live in a time now that is unlike any other when it comes to the mass media and the influence it has on popular thought. 100 years ago, the mass media did not exist as it does today. There were different newspaper outlets, and there were different little journals that would produce like Ben Franklin's, you know, almanac and all that other stuff, but nobody wielded the influence anywhere close to what's wielded today by mass media. You know, I was looking at You guys know who the AC Nielsen company is? They're the ones that do the TV ratings. I worked in radio for a while, and we didn't use Nielsen ratings. We used Arbitron ratings. But Nielsen does all the ratings for television. And I went and did a little research with them. They said, according to AC Nielsen, the average American watches 4 hours of TV a day. Does that sound right? The average American watches about 4 hours of TV a day. Do you know how much that is? That is 2 straight months of TV watching per year without any sleep. Just 2 solid months out of a whole year is watching TV. Do you know what that adds up to by the time a person is 65? 9 straight years. The average American watches 9 straight years of TV in the lifetime if they reach 65. Do you know how many commercials they've seen? An average of about 2 million. About 2 million commercials, okay? So you take those same kids, and let's say they're young now, they're going to live to be 65. What kind of messages are they going to get just from the mass media now? But not just the education, so just from the mass media, what are they going to get?
Buy my stuff and go green.
Buy my stuff and go green.
Life's all about acquiring what, doing what you want to do and acquiring what you want to do.
Okay, I think Dick nailed it right there. I watch my TV and I hear messages, whether they come out right out and say it or not. The messages I hear are, you need this to be happy. You need this to be beautiful. You guys seen the Just for Men commercial recently? And there are all these other messages, like, you need this to be sexually fulfilled. There's a whole lot of commercials. Have anybody seen the Extends commercials lately? Insight, all this different stuff. It's just right there on your screen. You know, I'm watching it in the same room where my kids are. And these commercials are coming up. You need this to find a mate. eHarmony? Singles Lines? So the bottom line is, just from the mass media side, is this message that I see is, you're not good enough. You're not good enough the way you are. You need something more in order to be good enough. You're not cool enough, you're not beautiful enough, you don't smell right, you're not going to get a mate unless you buy this, right? And our kids get this. So we're bombarded with these messages all the time. Somebody did some research a while back. They said the average American sees 3,000 ads a day. Just walking down the street, thumbing through the newspaper, watching the TV, everywhere. I mean, look, there's some on our wall right here. Milk. Potty by milk. Just look around. 3,000 ads a day. So what's the big message with all of these? The most important thing, as Dick said, in life is your own happiness. That's what our society ingrains into our children. That's what it is. These messages really urge us to be self-centered. And I think they affect us. I know they affect me. You can look in my closet and see that I'm affected by advertising.
It's time to share.
Yeah. I'm actually wearing an advertisement right now for a band I like.
All the time.
Well, this text that we're going to deal with tonight answers the question, what is the most important thing in a Christian's life? And it's not any of the products that I saw advertised on TV, unfortunately for them. There are 5 messages about marriage in verses, well, really more than that, but 5 we're going to key in on, 25 through 40. And those messages really reveal a lot about a biblical view of priorities. So if you would hit that first slide, we're just going to break this down as we go. Now, about virgins, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. Excuse me. Because of the present crisis, I think that it is good for you to remain as you are. Are you married? Do not seek a divorce. Are you unmarried? Do not look for a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. But those who marry will face many troubles in this life, and I want to spare you this. All right. In verse 25, he says, I have no command from the Lord. Do you guys remember what we said last week? Is Paul saying here that what I am about to say is uninspired? What I am about to say really shouldn't be in the Bible. Is that what he's saying here?
He's saying the Lord never spoke to me.
He's saying that Jesus never said anything specifically about this situation, okay? And this situation is kind of fuzzy. And we'll get into that. Verse 26, he says, because of the present crisis, I think it's important for you to remain as you are. Obviously, Paul is addressing a specific situation here, that this crisis that these Corinthian people are facing. There are two theories that I've run across as to what this crisis is. Actually, several, but two major ones. Okay, the first one is some scholars believe that present crisis is referring to Christian persecution. And I think that's incorrect. And the reason I think that is incorrect is because while there were probably some cases, isolated cases of Christian persecution in the Roman world at this time, the real persecution didn't break out in Rome until after the Great Fire in Rome. And that was in 64 AD. Okay? This letter was written probably, we know for a fact Paul was in Corinth in 51 AD. We know that this letter was written within 2 to 3 years after his being there. So this was written somewhere between probably 51 and 55, 56 AD. Okay? The real persecution didn't start until about 10 years later. So present crisis probably does not refer to Christian persecution. Here's what I think it was. Okay? There are other writers in the Greek world at the same time that recorded a famine that affected the entire Greek world. There was a shortage of grain in the Greek world exactly around the time Paul would have been writing this letter. Now, grain was the basic substance, the basic food product in the Greek world. It was the basic building block for making a whole lot of things that they normally consumed. So when the grain ran out, you got to think you're living in the most powerful empire in the world. It would kind of be like us running out of food or facing a famine here in the United States. How would you feel if you weren't sure if you were going to eat tomorrow? Think that would be a crisis? I think so. I think so. Catch my notes here. Sounds like he's against marriage? We'll get into that. He has an interesting view. He's not against it. But we'll talk about that. In verse 27 and 28, he mentions this virgin again. He says, are you married? Do not seek a divorce. Are you unmarried? Do not look for a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. But those who marry will face many troubles in this life, and I want to spare you this. In the Roman world, these girls were betrothed to be married very early, sometimes as early as 10 years old. Can you imagine saying you can marry my 10-year-old daughter?
It's like Arkansas.
Just like Arkansas? Do you know something about that that I don't? But you have to be their cousin. That's the difference.
You got that tape one over there?
Yeah. Yep, kissing cousins. It's on the tape. They could be betrothed as early as 10. You know when they could get married? 12. For girls. That was the legal age of puberty for young ladies. That was actually written in the laws. So that is the age when these girls could be married. And it's my understanding that the father would have been the one to give the final okay to a marriage. We talked last week about how really to get married in Rome, you just had to find a couple of people that would agree to be married. But really it was the father, in studying this further, that would really give the final okay. And the father in this situation may have felt obligated to go ahead and hand his daughter over if he had already betrothed her, even though he didn't like the idea because of this current situation in the world. These young women, you got to understand, when they got married, you remember what we talked about last week, these girls were really encouraged to have kids right away. There was this huge social pressure for these young ladies to basically produce children, and they would get these societal benefits from it. So if you're a dad, why would you want to put your daughter in that situation?
I thought she'd starve to death because it was
think she's not going to have enough money to feed her grandkids. So if you're a dad, why would you put her in that situation? So I think what Paul is probably dealing with here, there's probably, when it says now about virgins, I have no plan at the beginning, 25, he's probably responding to a question that they had asked in a previous letter. Because I think what's happening here is you've got these fathers who have promised their daughters to these young men, and now they don't want to really give their daughters to these young men, but there's an integrity issue there. You know, would it be lying if I promised my daughter to this kid and now I don't want to give her to him because I don't want them to starve? So I really think that's what's going on. Okay. And Paul's basic message in these verses is being unmarried will make it easier for the Corinthians to deal with their present crisis, whatever it happens to be. Okay, and I think it's probably a family. So the message, marriage message number one, is life is simpler when you're unmarried. Okay? Life is simpler when you're unmarried. Go ahead and hit the next slide. We're going to hit 29 through 31 here. What I mean, brothers, is that the time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they had none. Those who mourn as if they did not.
Don't they still? I'm sorry.
Those who are happy as if they were not. Those who buy something as if it were not theirs to keep. And those who use the things of this world as if not engrossed in them. For this world in its present form is passing away. Okay. Basically, he's saying that his view of the world is a little bit different than maybe most people's. You know, whenever Paul became a Christian, his view of the world changed. He stopped focusing on these temporal matters or temporary matters or earthly matters, like getting pats on the back. If you read Galatians 1:10 and talking about his old life, he says, if I were still trying to please men, I would not be serving Christ. His old life was about pleasing men. But after he came to Jesus, he started concerning himself more with eternal matters. And so his outlook was future-oriented. You guys remember when I spoke on Ephesians, one of the points in that sermon was about being future-oriented and how Christians are future-oriented. Well, that's what Paul was. He's looking ahead to eternity. And this is something that's consistent in his writings. Go ahead and hit the next slide. This is 2 Corinthians 4:18. This is just to kind of illustrate. Okay.
I've got to copy that. I've never read that before.
Oh man, it's powerful.
Thank you.
No problem. 2 Corinthians 4:18, just to kind of illustrate Paul's view, this future orientation, as he says, we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. So what does this tell us about how we should view our lives here? I mean, what is this teaching us? What does it tell us about how we should view the things that we're into here? About our hobbies, about our careers, about our business, what we're engrossed in right now. Does it have eternal consequences?
They're not going to last.
They're not going to last.
They're not going to last.
So what is he saying to focus on? That which has eternal consequences. That is the main message here. 1 Thessalonians 4, we're talking about marriage here. Is marriage eternal? I've heard some people say it is. Okay, I've done counseling with people before who actually thought that marriage was eternal. And it's not. Marriage itself is not. Now you will, if you have a Christian mate, see them in heaven again. 1 13, we do not want you to be ignorant about those who fall asleep or to grieve like the rest of men who have no hope. We believe that Jesus died and rose again, and so believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in them. Okay? We will see our Christian brothers and sisters again, whether we're married to them or not. Hit the next slide. Jesus teaches in Matthew 22 that marriage is not eternal. Okay? He says, starting in verse 24, Matthew 22, 24 through 30, teacher, they said, Moses told us that if a man dies without having children, this is, I think it's the Sadducees talking to him, if a man dies without having children, his brother must marry the widow and have children for him. Now there were seven brothers among us. The first one married and died, and since he had no children, he left his wife to his brother. The same thing happened to the second and the third brother, right down to the seventh. Finally, the woman died. Now then, at the resurrection, whose wife will she be in the seventh, since all of them were married to her? Jesus replied, you're in error, because you don't know the scriptures or the power of God. At the resurrection, people, listen to this, people will neither marry nor be given in marriage. They will be like the angels in heaven. Okay. Now, I tell you all this because there's something we need to understand about marriage, and that is that it is temporary. It is for this world. It is not for eternity. Okay? It's something that's for this world. So when Paul says in verse 31, if you want to go back to the Corinthians slide, a couple of slides back, when he says, for this world in its present form is passing away, when he says, this is passing away, included in that is earthly marriage. And that's something that a lot of people, I think, just don't know. The only eternal marriage is the one that exists between Jesus and the church. Marriage between humans is meant to be a prequel to the marriage that's going to happen between Jesus and the church. You guys heard that term, the bride of Christ? I've heard that over and over and over again. And I, for some reason in my head, I had this image of us already being married to Christ. The church is already married to Christ. But did you know the language? Actually, we're engaged to him right now. The church is engaged to Christ. The consummation takes place for the church on Judgment Day, when Jesus opens the doors to heaven for us. So earthly marriage is a prequel to what's going to happen on Judgment Day when Jesus opens the doors to heaven. The consummation of an earthly marriage is a prequel to Judgment Day and what Jesus will do for us on Judgment Day. I thought that was kind of neat. Had anybody ever heard that before? I had never heard that before until this week. Well, it's just the language, the bride of Christ. That's the imagery that's used. So, we're engaged, and we're not married. We're to be married on Judgment Day. So that's pretty cool. But anyway, in verse 29 through 31, really the call is just to focus on the eternal consequences of one's life rather than on the temporal. So the marriage message number two is remaining unmarried helps one focus on the eternal rather than on the temporal. Remaining unmarried helps one focus on the eternal rather than the temporal. Can you go to the next slide, 32 through 35? I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife, and his interests are divided. An unmarried woman or virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. I am saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in undivided devotion to the Lord. All right. Is Paul calling marriage worldly in this passage?
Only to the extent that he recognizes marriage as a relationship that affects us within the confines of this world. That's the
okay. So he is calling marriage worldly.
Yeah, not in the context that we would talk about something being worldly and therefore being sinful.
Okay. I think you're right. A married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife. I think he is seeing this as worldly, but he's not saying it's a sin.
That's right.
Okay. He's saying it's temporary. He's saying it's temporary. And when Paul says a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, he's not saying that a married man is caught up in sin. He's saying that a large part of a married man's life, a large part of his time and energy, revolves around something that's temporary. Okay, it's not saying it's sinful, just that it's temporary. Something that he's only going to have in this world. And as a result, his interests are divided, as it says. In addition to pleasing his wife, he's also concerned, of course, with carrying out Jesus' mission, but he can't devote his entire time to carrying out Jesus' mission. He's got a family to take care of. He's got a family he's obligated to. In verse 34, let's see, an unmarried woman or virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. This unmarried woman or virgin, hit the next slide. I think this is what this unmarried woman or virgin could look like. In Mark 12, 41-44, Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins worth only a fraction of a penny. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, I tell you the truth, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she out of her poverty put in everything, all she had to live on. Let me ask you a question. Do you think that this poor widow would have given up all her worldly wealth to serve God if she had a family to feed at home? I don't think she would have. I think that's a good example of the types of things a person can do when really all they have to worry about is themselves. I wouldn't do that if I had to go home and feed Naomi and Conrad that night. I wouldn't be able to. That would be sinful of me to do that. But her situation, she could. If you could go back one slide. Verse 35 says, I'm saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in undivided devotion to the Lord. Listen to that, undivided devotion to the Lord. Does this go against today's thinking? Even in Christian circles, this idea of undivided devotion to the Lord. Do you believe that Jesus is really most people's very highest priority today? That's what he says is the ideal, undivided devotion to the Lord. That's marriage message number 3. Remaining unmarried allows a person to give all of their attention to serving God. Okay? Go ahead and hit the next slide. If anyone thinks he is acting improperly toward the virgin he is engaged to, and if she is getting along in years and he feels he ought to marry, he should do as he wants. He is not sinning. They should get married. But the man who has settled the matter in his own mind, who is under no compulsion, that has control over his own will, and who has made up his mind not to marry the virgin, this man also does the right thing. So then, he who marries the virgin does right, but he who does not marry her does even better. In verse 36, Paul is probably addressing a specific situation. He may just be giving general advice. But there were likely a few people in the Corinthian church who were engaged to be married, as we talked about earlier. Remember, they were probably in the middle of this famine. And as time drew closer for these young couples to get married, these young engaged couples, it probably would have been a little tough for some of the young men to control themselves. And Paul basically says, if you can't control yourself, if you're going to get into sin, you need to go ahead and get married. But if you can't control yourself, then hold off. Now, he is used Notice it says he. It doesn't say she. It says if anyone thinks he is acting improperly, and it uses he all through that verse. Some commentators believe that that reflects the idea, or really the fact that it was the man, the groom, who was in charge of arranging the wedding. They say that that's probably why that's used over and over there. And a few commentators note that the NIV's translation on this third line down is getting along in years, if she is getting along in years. A lot of people believe that the NIV botched that, and that should say if she is sexually developed or if she has blossomed. They say that that's the idea of that phrase there. And really, that makes more sense because young girls were married very young, and then the rest of the context here is kind of talking about sexual sin. So that kind of makes sense for it to go like that. But basically, to sum up Paul's teaching on this matter down in verse 38, neither getting married or not is a sin. But it's better to not, according to him, in this situation. So that's marriage message number four. Getting married is honorable, but those who can go through life without it should. And I think a side note here, long engagements are dumb. That's just my personal opinion. Go ahead and hit the, we're on the last slide here. Actually, next to last. Verse 39, a woman is bound to her husband as long as she lives, but if her husband dies, she's free to marry anyone she wishes, but he must belong to the Lord. In my judgment, she's happier if she stays as she is. And I think I too have the Spirit of God. Okay. 39, the first part, marriage is for life. A woman is bound to her husband as long as he lives. There's no escape clause. You don't get married and say, try this out, and if it doesn't work, then we'll see you later. Somebody was saying a while back, people get married three times nowadays. The first time they get married for fun, the second time they get married, what is it, for companionship, the third time for kids or something. Something crazy. I don't know if that's true or not. I know the statistics. Some people say there's 50% divorce rate. I really don't think that's true because they go back and survey the same couples and they report multiple divorces and then they kind of clump that in. Even if it's not 50%, we know divorce is a problem today. So this is something that people need to hear. When you get married, you need to go buy your gravestones the same day. It is for life. And I know that is a feel-good message, another one of those you can share with your kids. When you get married, go buy the plots at the graveyard. 39, the second part, basically he says if a widow wants to remarry, she needs to marry a Christian. And I think the first time, he actually says later, if you want to marry at all, you need to marry a Christian, whether it's the first time or not. And I think, and I teach, when I'm working with college kids, you need to date someone. If you're a Christian young lady, a Christian young man, you really need to date someone who is a Christian. And I know there are a lot of people who flirt and convert, but I've also seen that go the wrong way a few times. I've seen some people really kind of destroy their spiritual lives because they've romantically gotten involved with someone who didn't share their faith or who wasn't serious about their faith. They really hurt them. And then the last verse, verse 40, in my judgment, she's happier, talking about the widow, she stays as she is, and I think I too have the Spirit of God. He basically ends this chapter by saying he believes widows would be happier if they remained unmarried. And he lets them know that he too has the Spirit of God, which makes me think that his opinion on this is probably counter to somebody else in the church who may have had a loud voice at this time. So the last marriage message number five, is that Christian marriage is between Christians and marriages for life. That basically sums it up. So this Corinthian culture was a lot like our own in that people were taught from an early age that they're to highly value having a family, they're to highly value having children, they're to highly value social status and material wealth. People were taught to be totally engrossed in this world. They were taught to be totally engrossed in temporary things. People were taught that their top priority should be really stuff that doesn't matter. Ultimately, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. So what should be a top priority in a person's life? Just taking all of these messages and kind of squashing them together. What does this say?
God should be the top priority.
God should be the top priority. What specifically? About God. Basically just...
He should be your life.
Yeah. Basically just serving God. Is kind of what I get out of it, and I think that's what you were saying. So is getting married and having a family the most important thing in life? Is gaining material wealth the most important thing in life? No. It's not. Serving God is. Excuse me. Is getting married dishonorable? Don't think so. Paul says, kind of leaves me with the impression it is.
Paul said, I have the right to have a wife as surely as Peter did. And you know, Paul is talking here in the context of whatever, as you said, whatever this crisis is, mm-hmm. whatever this situation is, you've got a setting, you've got a moment in time in which Paul is saying, you know, with what you're fixing to go through, I wouldn't change anything. I would not change anything. I wouldn't. If I'm unmarried, I wouldn't marry. If I'm married, I wouldn't be trying to get out of that marriage. I would tell you right now, it's going to be hard enough to be faithful to the commitments you've made. Right now is not the time to take on other commitments.
Well, I think you're right.
Well, one of the things God said long before he said any of this was, it's not good for man to be alone.
Well, and yeah, and for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, give to his wife, and two shall be one. There's no question of what marriage is blessed of God. But there's also no question. We run into this with Paul. Paul sees things through somewhat of a different paradigm than other writers. And the other thing is, you pointed this out. We don't know exactly what the questions were. Mm-hmm. That Paul is, and it's obvious he's answering questions. Mm-hmm. But we don't know what the question was. We know what the answer is. And so we have to sometimes kind of make up the question.
Yeah.
And whatever it is, you know, Paul says, Jesus never addressed this issue.
Yeah.
But you've asked me to, so here's what I'm going to say. You know.
I was joking. I don't really
know, I know you're
saying that
yeah.
marriage is dishonorable, just to clear
Paul said that to be an elder, one of the requirements is
to be married.
To be married.
That's right. To have kids. I think there are benefits to both. To being single or being married. I think there are benefits to both. I think there are things you learn in life, lessons you learn in life just by living it, either as a single or a married person. For a married person, they're going to learn some things that the single person's not going to learn, and the single person's going to learn some things that the married person's not going to learn. I think each is a gift from God, and I think each is a blessing from God. And I think whatever situation you're in life, I think that's how we should view it, a gift from God. A gift from God. But whether you're married or single, you know, he says ideally that a single person can devote all their time to God. I know a lot of single people that don't at all. But you have the ability to. You can get up and go where you want to. You can make the decisions you want to. You can spend as much time on certain things as you want to. And that's kind of the main point that I get from this. Anyway, we'll skip that last. Well, go ahead and hit the last slide. This is just that picture of Judgment Day in Revelation 20, 12 and 13. And I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne. The books were opened. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. The dead were judged according to what they had done, as recorded in the books. The sea gave up the dead that were in it, and death and Hades gave up the dead that were in them, and each person was judged according to what he had done. I just picture this moment in my life, and I wonder what's going to be written in that book about me. I wonder what's going to be written in that book about me. And I think you can just read that and say, there's what really mattered in my life. And I want it for myself to be God. I really do. And I hope that you want it too.